Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Paul Loudon with Breakthrough Thinking Broadcasting Network. And tonight, or today, we're doing Understanding Autism. This is the second Tuesday of every month. I'm here with Kim Isaac, and we have a guest, Debbie.
Debbie Weidinger. Did I say that correctly?
Yes, you did.
Okay. Yeah. No, we're very excited to have you, Debbie. Actually, so today we're going to be talking about teens and young adults with autism, which is something that is a huge. It's a huge topic right now because all of these people with autism, you know, from years ago, I mean, when I got into the field, you know, they've all grown up over time. And so there's a lot of issues at hand, you know, topics and concerns and questions. And I guess maybe we could just start with you kind of sharing with the listeners who you are and just a little bit about yourself.
Sure, I'd be happy to. In fact, tagging along what you just said, sometimes families forget that our little kiddos actually grow up and they're going to be adults a whole lot longer than their children. And so we do have to prepare for that. But my name is Debbie Weidinger, and I am Executive Director of AZ Assist. And we can be found on the web at www.azassist.com. And we are a family support group for teens and young adults on the autism spectrum, and we work with all of those issues related to transition, so housing, transportation, work, college, career, high school students working with that IEP in the schools. We support families. We bring in speakers to help our parents understand the issues, but we also supply an opportunity for our teens and young adults to get together twice a month and build a community of like-minded individuals, and we've really found that to be a very powerful thing for them.
Absolutely. I feel like, you know, a big thing that I think we need to focus on in the community is building community.
Absolutely.
And you've really done that. And actually, why don't you tell people a little bit about how you got involved in AZ Assist, or
sure,
how that came about, because your story is amazing.
Oh, thank you, Kim.
And very inspiring. So,
well, in during my son's high school years, he is on the spectrum. He's currently 24. I was kind of looking over that high school cliff, as we call it, and thinking, oh, my goodness, what are we going to do? Where is he going to get a friend? Where is he going to have someone to go hang out with? I had kind of an inkling that he would probably go to community college, but it's different to find friends there than like in high school when you're with the same people all the time. Not that he had great success with friends in high school, but I was just looking at that cliff, and I would run into people at autism conferences that had similar issues with that age range, 16, 17, 18-year-olds, and we just kind of grassroots sort of got together with other moms and parents and said, let's meet and chat, and we met a couple of times in different homes. And one of the issues that came up right away was, you know, when we talked about what are our major obstacles, and that was socialization for our kiddos. And so I just kind of said, great, bring them next time. And lo and behold, we had parents in one room and our young adults and teens in another room. And more than once, on several occasions, we had parents weeping with, oh, my goodness, this is the first time my son or daughter has felt accepted in any group of people. And so we saw the power in that, and that really spurred me on to keep going. We had no idea we were creating something, none at all. But when my family room had 40 people in it, we looked around and went, uh-oh. we need a new place to meet. And so we've grown out of actually three facilities, and now we meet regularly at the corner of the 101 and Southern Avenue in Tempe. A church there has graciously given us a building that we can use once a month for our meetings.
Wow.
And so just a great growth curve. Like I said, we didn't anticipate it, but we went ahead and did a 501c3 nonprofit designation a couple of years ago. So that's gotten us a little bit more into the community with donations and things like that.
That is so amazing.
Thanks.
You know, I have a few things I thought we could talk about today. You know, one of them is just some of the topics and the issues that are present in this transitional time. And also, you know, we know we have listeners all over the world, and you are based in sunny Arizona. But, you know, you are someone who started this, you know, and who was able to form something that is beneficial to the community. And I was hoping you could share some of your tips or ideas for people in other cities to start something like this you know, for themselves.
Well, I can tell you, no matter where you are on this planet, you are not alone in your journey with an individual on the spectrum. We've seen the numbers grow for years and years and years. So if you're feeling alone, I understand the loneliness of that feeling. But truly, in your community, there are others that are just like your son or daughter and are needing that connection. And so somebody just has to decide to own it.
Right.
And to have the passion and to see the outcome of what it's like to have individuals come around each other, and they have different skill sets and they can help each other and do things. So I would encourage anyone that sees that spark and feels that pull in their heart to say, okay, I'm going to pick this day and this time and this place because it's convenient for me, not because I think it'll work for the rest of the world, but it's convenient for me. And then to start to advertise that. And then that can be a big question. Well, who do I tell? Well, you tell every school in your community. You can certainly send it to churches that have a disability program. You can go online and just type in autism organizations in your city and start spreading the word that way via email or a flyer. And it might be slow at first, but even if you only have 3 or 4 families that gather for a few months, then you've built a bond, and then that's your organizational team to move forward. And the power in it is indescribable. So I would love for someone, mom or dad or professional or young adult with autism, to have that spark and say, we need to do that here and create that.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I think what I've seen, I have clients that I work with all over the country, and the numbers for autism, they are so high. And what's striking to me is, despite that, everybody's kind of like an island.
Yes.
I mean, we have all these organizations, but families themselves seem to just feel isolated, or, you know, I guess for one reason or another, people aren't connecting as strongly as maybe they would in other, you know, areas, disabilities and stuff. So the idea of building community is such a great start to anything. I mean, even if it, you know, maybe doesn't turn into exactly what you've been able to do, you have other people to connect with, you know, and share life with, because people are going to understand on one level or another. I mean, the spectrum is definitely the spectrum. But I think, you know, parents go through such similar things on different levels.
Right. And when you say to share life with, Kim, too, I think it's another benefit of building a community is, I can get a break because now I finally feel like someone that I know understands. Because sometimes even within our own family, asking someone to kidsit, you know, we don't want to say babysit anymore, but to kidsit or provide respite could be, you know, the technical term in the field. It can be really hard to even ask family sometimes because they just don't get some of the things we need them to get. But another family who's walking it with you can really be a great
for that,
for your own mental health. You know, and another key for marketing, I think, back to starting something in another community, is the autism societies in different countries and in the U.S. probably have a website, most likely, and maybe be having some meetings. And what happened with me, too, is when my son got older and I started attending some adult meetings, I saw that those adults were 40, 45, 50,
mm-hmm.
and this goofy 18-year-old didn't fit very well and didn't find anyone that he could connect with. And I thought, I love this model of the parents meeting separately and the adults meeting separately. And I thought, you know what, that can be our model too. So on our monthly meetings, I don't think we brought this up yet, the parents have a speaker from the community to talk about any kind of a transition issue. And we can talk about what those are as we go forward today. But then our kids, and I put that in quotes, hang out. It's just hangout time. We have snacks and drinks and, of course, video games, but also a basketball and a ping pong table and air hockey. And we have our supervisors are all on the spectrum, so we have some mentoring going on. It's really a neat thing to watch.
How many people do you currently have involved in your group?
At a regular monthly meeting, we normally have about 80 people show
wow.
up. So it's like putting on a mini conference once a month.
That's
I won't
amazing.
Say that it's, you know, no work at all, because you need to keep communication open and keep meeting notices and, you know, the room clean and snack spot and supervisors in check and some training. But it's so worth it to see the change in some of the individuals. Can I tell you about one of our young men?
Absolutely.
One of our young men came to us kind of by chance, which many do, just kind of somebody knows somebody, or they actually, somebody does a Google search or something, but he came and he was very, I'll use the word dark, sad, unkempt, did not carry himself well, didn't talk hardly to anybody or anything. It was very scary. And he wasn't scary, just the situation
right.
was scary.
Concerning.
Yeah, very concerning. And then in talking to him, his parents had made him live in the garage just because they didn't want him in the house. And my heart was just breaking. But he kept coming. And then our other young men and women surrounded him, and they became buds and started doing things together. And several months later, he happened to be in my home with my son visiting. And he says, "Hey, Debbie, my doctor reduced my medication." I said, "Really? Why do you think that happened?" "Oh, I don't know." I said, "Well, let me tell you why that happened. Because you have a community now of like-minded individuals, and you're healthier. Your depression has lifted because you're not stuck in a dark room somewhere." So, you know what? It's a lot of work, Kim, but it's so worth it.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like it. I would imagine to feel accepted and supported and wanted.
Yes.
You know, we want you in our community. I think, you know, in society, there's a lot that goes on with autism where they feel like, "I don't fit in here and I don't fit in there." And I can totally see why one would feel like that. But to feel like, wow, this group wants me.
Mm-hmm.
I am a part of something.
And to see
bigger.
Them texting each other on meeting day, "Are you coming? Are you coming? Bring your FP.
Aww.
Bring your, you know, bring your whatever you've got, you know. Or make sure you bring this gamer. We need 3 extra controllers." And just to see all of that going on is wonderful.
That's amazing. Do you have, well, I mean, I guess I was just going to ask you what the ratio is of girls to boys. However, obviously there is a ratio with autism, but I was just curious what that is.
We had years, actually, where we had one young lady.
Oh.
And goodness gracious, got to say good for her for showing up every time with all these guys.
Right.
But as time went on, again, and I would encourage people, if you're going to start it, just hang on to the end of the rope for the long haul, because,
right.
you know, people will find you. Eventually, a few more girls, and now we have romances.
Oh.
And we have a fiancé deal going on.
Yeah.
And we've had to also then be there to pick up the pieces for breakups, because that's a natural part
of right.
you know, love. But what a fun thing. And not everybody is male-female. We've got some relationships with females, and, you know, it's
right.
just a cross-section of the community like there would be anywhere.
Right, just like in any community.
That's
there's
right.
the diversity within
Absolutely.
The population.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's amazing. I'm curious, too, like, so how do you decide what, you know, I do want to get into topics, but I do want to ask you, how do you decide the events? I mean, does the group come together and say, "These are the things we want to do"? Or how does that come about?
In an ideal world, and we're actually, our board of directors is trying to implement a new style of deciding, and that is to include our older young adults
right.
that have been in the program for a while to, like, pick and start organizing and to transfer some of those responsibilities, because it's a great learning tool
mm-hmm.
for them to understand how to organize and whatnot. But we haven't done that yet, so us moms decide
mm-hmm.
where we're going.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband has a funny thing that he tells me. He says, "Debbie, it doesn't matter what you decide to do, they're going to show up because you're doing something." And it is actually the truth. It doesn't
really?
Matter if it's a swimming party, a picnic in the park, video games mm-hmm. live, out to dinner. It just doesn't
That's
matter.
Right.
Because, again, why do they want to be there? Because their friends are going to be there.
Right.
Where their friends are going to be.
Well, that's great that they're finding the joy in the connection,
mm-hmm.
you know, because that's, I think that that's really important, because people with autism don't always, well, not just have the opportunity, but don't get to, they don't experience what that feels like.
Yeah.
So it's easy to kind of go solo and do things on your own. And if people only knew that joy that you can feel, that excitement, that happiness by doing things with others in a,
right.
in a safe, you know, comfortable way. So why don't we actually take a break? And when we come back, we'll get into some topics,
transition
topics.
Beerenbaum Baum and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Beerenbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Ridenour, Heinzen & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues, corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Heinzen & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Hello, I'm Jessica Olson, and I'm here to introduce you to someone whose job it is to stand together with you at the worst of times. Life throws us unexpected curveballs, including losing loved ones, caretaking, troubled retirements, job losses, and legal settlements. Meet certified financial planner Larry Moscat, who pioneered crisis financial counseling. With a background as a clinical psychology practitioner, Larry has helped numerous people see through their crises to a brighter financial future. Larry?
Thank you, Jessica. At our firm, RII Advisors in North Scottsdale, we know terrible times don't usually last, but the effects of anxiety-infused financial decisions can last a lifetime. For 30 years, our prime goal has been to introduce freedom from fear and a feeling of financial security for our clients. We then move forward with safety and best-case outcome results when it comes to the financial decisions made during the worst of times.
To learn more, log on to www.RIIAdvisors.com. That's RIIAdvisors.com for information on how to get help. Once again, that's RIIAdvisors.com for financial counseling during life's most challenging times.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Welcome back to Understanding Autism. This is Paul Loudon. I'm here with Kim Isaac and Debbie Weidinger. Never going to get that one right. And we're talking about her efforts with AZ Assist and transition.
Yes, transition for teens and young adults with autism. So we talked a little bit about your background and you know, a little bit about how you started the organization. And so now I thought we could dive into some transition-related topics.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So, you know, we were thinking about starting with housing. So tell us what you know. Do a brain dump here on us. We want everything.
Well, I think every community would have its own uniqueness, but I think there are also some general things that go on in the community for our young adults on the spectrum related to housing. I do think it's important to say that I would guess that most of our young adults are not thinking about living their whole life with their parents. Now, for some, that's going to be appropriate, but for others, not. And so for that group of people, where? What? What does that look like? And there's a lot of options. Some, it might be extremely appropriate to have a group home environment the supervision and transportation provided and community right in that group home, and that might be a really good option. For others, it might be more appropriate to have an individually designed living arrangement. IDLA is what we call those here in Arizona. I don't know if that's across the country or not. And that could be just about anything. That could be two or three individuals living in a home, and maybe they need 8 hours a week of support. Maybe they need 20 hours a week of support. But that's an individual thing. So that's a possibility. I know some families are, as they get toward retirement age of the parents, they're moving away from that family home into a smaller place and leaving that family home to the individual on the spectrum, and then hiring an agency to come in. And again, maybe it's full-time care, maybe it's part-time care, and then renting out the other rooms to other individuals. So that's another unique way to think about that. Something I had thought about when I was looking forward for my family was maybe purchasing a fourplex and hiring someone to live in one of the four units and renting out the other three to either one or two people at a time, and just having someone kind of there as a touch point, but not providing any care, not doing any cooking or transportation, but just being a touch point for help. Or, you know what, let's just move into an apartment, see what happens. And I do want to speak to that just a little bit, Kim, because I don't think there's any child living with their mom that's ever going to display independent living skills, whether they're on the spectrum or not. I just don't think it's going to happen.
Moms are moms. They're caretaking. They want to do for you.
I can only leave that dirty sock on the floor for a certain amount of time, and then I'm going to pick it up, and he, they, she knows it. So I really think there's some huge power in sending them off, you know, not like to Timbuktu, but down the street in an apartment, and stick them in there and see what happens.
Yeah.
Because I have found that in our family, when my son did move out about 7 months ago, he really stood up and took ownership of, I have an apartment. And that was a very meaningful thing, and things he would never do in my home.
Did he initiate that?
Oh, did he initiate? He had always talked about wanting to have an apartment, but financially that was not a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
And that brings up another
subject. I was going to say that I'm sure is on people's minds, the finances of how the housing works.
Yes.
Yeah.
We were fortunate enough 4 years ago to get in that tiny little window of when Section 8 applications, when you could get on the waiting list.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, I think it was open for 2 or 3 days, and we heard about it, went down there, stood in line, and got on the waiting list. And at that time, my son was 18, 19 years old, and I was terrified. I'm thinking, oh, no, what if they call next week? And, you know, he's not ready to go. But it took 4 years, and by then, I didn't think he was ready, but he was ready. And so we decided, let's go set him up. Let's just go set him up. And we did. And the Section 8 housing voucher made it so that with his disability payments and a little bit of work that he does here and there, made it work for him. And he loves the flexibility, the freedom to live how he chooses. And don't we all want that for our kids? We want that for our kids, to have the freedom to choose. You know, and I don't know if he's going to live there forever, but he's really happy now.
Yeah.
So
what changes have you seen, besides, like, that sense of pride? I mean, well, Paul, how did you feel when you left your parents' home? I know you had a different circumstance, but how was that for you?
I was pretty indifferent, I guess. At the time, I wasn't even – when I first left my parents' home, it was to move here to Phoenix, actually.
Okay.
When I went to the University of Advancing Computer Technology, which is apparently now the University of Advancing Technology. They've renamed themselves. But anyway, so I was trying to attend that. That didn't go particularly well. But I wasn't thinking of where I was living as my home so much as someplace I was staying, because I knew I was only going to be there for a couple of years while I was attending school.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, to me, the same way you kind of think about a hotel room or a dorm, which isn't really the same as a home, even though it was an apartment and everything, and it was off the
atmosphere. Being on your own,
you know,
without having people talk, you know, not like telling you what to do, or just that constant supervision, or
My parents generally left us pretty independently most of the time anyway, so it wasn't that big of a change.
Right.
So I didn't really think about it that much. Honestly, I never really thought about it that much.
Okay.
So,
is it different now that you have, a home? Like, you're not in the dorm. Do you feel like that's really your home? Or do you feel like your parents' home is your home?
The thing is, I moved every 2 to 4 years for my entire life up to when I turned about 20.
Right.
I never had anywhere I thought of as a permanent home.
Right.
So I haven't, I'm not in that mindset. It's just I've had a fairly unique situation.
That's true.
I don't have that permanent home mindset. It's the place where I sleep and keep my stuff.
Right.
So
everybody's different. But that's a good point, because I think you're talking about, in my mind, I think about the people I work with, and you're talking about a particular population. I mean, I do know some people that, don't, in addition to their autism, have a lot of other impairments that make it difficult to have the skills to live on their own. And I also know some that actually don't want to leave home, and they're afraid of that.
One thing I do enjoy about it is the control of my environment. I do like that it's quiet when I want it to be quiet, most of the time. My neighborhood apparently celebrates the 4th of July for a week with fireworks every night. With people down the street.
Well, you're in Texas.
We like blowing things up. But but beyond that, most of the time, I like that it's quiet when I want it to be quiet, and I don't have anyone imposing a sleep schedule on me beyond when I feel I need to be up to get certain things done or meet certain people or whatever it is that I've set my schedule to be. So I do enjoy that aspect of it, the control. So I think that I would agree with her that getting them the chance to move out and seeing how that works and being unafraid of failure, that, maybe they're going to move out and it's not going to work because there are things you've overlooked, or maybe it's just not a good fit for them on their own, and maybe they need a roommate, or maybe, you try it with a roommate and they don't need a roommate. But I think that being unafraid of failure and trying to get out there is probably a good idea.
And I think going into it with that attitude, too. So as a parent, you may be thinking that, but be sure to talk to your kids about that so that they don't feel like they failed. We're going to try this, see how it goes. We're going to support you. We're going to identify things. We're going to learn a lot, basically.
And
that
is so important for that failure or blanket of support to not feel like a failure.
Right.
It's a process. And, how many of us went off to college, went back home, got an apartment, went back home?
Well, not me, but yes.
but many.
Of course. That's the thing. It's very
learning.
Right. And you learn as you go, and you make adjustments based on what you learn.
I think this just goes back to a topic I keep coming back to, is the way we see things in media, is that it's important to talk about how, that idea that you see it in TV shows and movies or whatever, again, as kid grows up, kid goes to college, kid gets house, whatever. Like, there's sort of a stereotypical picture, and people on the autism spectrum are often very set in stone about things, that talk about how just because you aren't doing it this way doesn't mean you're doing it wrong, that those are just TV shows and movies. Because, like our dating show yesterday, a lot of times you can end up with the wrong impression of how you're supposed to do things, and talk about how there isn't a supposed to. There isn't a set in stone way, but rather that you're trying to find a way that works for you.
It's personal learning.
Very much.
Personal learning.
Very
so, okay, continue. We're kind of all chiming in.
Okay. I got to tell you, though, there was a part of me that wanted to kind of move my son into that apartment and like camp in it.
Well, you're a mom.
Just in case he needed to come home. But then I rethought that. I thought, no. It needs to be set up as if this is the move.
I'll say, when I moved here to Phoenix, we hadn't gotten my diagnosis yet, so there wasn't any of that. So that was just me on my own, messing things up.
Were you scared?
No.
Okay. I'm just wondering. It's a big change. I mean, well, again, you moved a lot, but it's kind of a triple whammy of a change because you didn't move with your family.
Yeah.
And you were in a new city and all that sort of thing.
It didn't seem like that big of a deal for me because I didn't.
Well, you think differently.
Yeah,
think
differently about a lot of things. So it didn't register me as significantly different. It really didn't. So.
Yeah. Actually, it looks like it's time to take a short break. And when we come back, Debbie, let's finish your housing stories and get some more ideas. So we're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back with more understanding.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Hello, I'm Jessica Olson, and I'm here to introduce you to someone whose job it is to stand together with you at the worst of times. Life throws us unexpected curveballs, including losing loved ones, caretaking, troubled retirements, job losses, and legal settlements. Meet certified financial planner Larry Moscat, who pioneered crisis financial counseling. With a background as a clinical psychology practitioner, Larry has helped numerous people see through their crises to a brighter financial future. Larry?
Thank you, Jessica. At our firm, RII Advisors in North Scottsdale, we know terrible times don't usually last, but the effects of anxiety-infused financial decisions can last a lifetime. For 30 years, our prime goal has been to introduce freedom from fear and a feeling of financial security for our clients. We then move forward with safety and best-case outcome results when it comes to the financial decisions made during the worst of times.
To learn more, log on to www.riiadvisors.com. That's RIIAdvisors.com for information on how to get help. Once again, that's RIIAdvisors.com for financial counseling during life's most challenging times.
Ridenour, Heinsohn & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues in corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Heinsohn & Lewis law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
At Beerenbaum Baum and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Beerenbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Welcome back to Understanding Autism. This is Paul Loudon. I'm here with Kim Isaac and Debbie Weidinger.
Weidinger. You got
almost.
Next break, you're going to have it for sure.
My memory for names is already terrible. So
you got the first name?
Yeah, well, my mom's a Debbie.
It's a great name. So before the break, we were talking about housing.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, we feel like we kind of got a lot packed into housing. And we can actually put some more things up on our Facebook page and our, should I just tell them real quick?
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
You tell them.
Okay, I'll tell them. Is that we finally got at least the first version of our website up and running. It's at understanding-autism.info.
Yes, so we're going to have an opportunity to post resources there.
You can visit our page. We've got a whole one blog post up and a couple of old episodes of our show and links to our YouTube videos and other things. You'll be able to sign in, talk on our forums, post comments on our posts, etc. So, we're not officially launching it for another month, but you can come in and see what's working. Let us know if anything is broken so that we can get it improved. So
we'll post some of the information you shared in the places that we share. And I thought we could move on to talk a little bit about employment, because that's another big topic.
It really is. And when we talk about employment, let's go back and talk about finishing high school and what's next.
Right.
It's kind of that what's next thing. You know, is it, so I want to put employment sort of came in a bucket of what's after high school.
Right.
Because for some people, employment's going to be what comes next. For some, it might be a vocational training program. For some, it might be some college or full-time or part-time. It might be away at college. It might be a local community college. So I like to put employment kind of in the bucket of what happens after high school. And I think for many of our individuals on the spectrum, at least that I see in AZ-ASSIST and in the community, just need a few extra years of life and growing up and experiences before they're ready to tackle college or employment. And that's my opinion. I don't have any research on that.
I sort of concur somewhat with that. I tell a lot of the families, I feel like some of these guys are just like late bloomers.
Yeah.
And I think it's scary when, it's kind of funny, Paul, we're talking about this media influence. I think parents also feel like, okay, they're 18. What's next? They need to follow this exact path maybe that either they grew up with or just society says, you know, it's supposed to be. But I feel like all of the people I've worked with, they come so far and they make so much progress. They just need a little extra time and guidance.
I think what I would say is that if you break it down, high school is typically very structured. You go to school at X a.m. and you leave school at Y p.m. And either you drive yourself or there's a bus or a parent drives you. But either way, it's very structured. It's 5 days a week. It's set schedule. Typically, when you go up to college, often you're living in a dorm and you have a more flexible schedule. It's two sort of significant life changes at a time. I wouldn't say that I necessarily think that it's a bad idea to go into college right out of high school,
right,
so much as I think it's a bad idea to go into college on your own, where if it's like a community college, if you're still living with your parents, and you can put together with the counselors of the community college like a full day schedule that you go to school again on a relatively common schedule 9 a.m. and leave school at 3 p.m. and you've got a ride to and from school. You've got someone who's helping you with that scheduling part of it. So your concentration is only on the classes and not on the self-management. Or if you just shift the focus to self-management and you move into a home on your own, but you don't have that concern of also dealing with the classes and everything.
Right.
And so I think that it's sort of not so much as a weight as take it one step at a time and keep the steps as small as possible, whereas a lot of times we say, okay, this is the next step. It's a really big step, and it's made out of a bunch of little steps that people don't really look at. So
right.
I think from my perspective, the idea is more just look at what the steps are and try to tackle them one at a time rather than trying to just jump all at once and recover any missteps.
I think that's
very
what you're starting to say is for each person it's going to be different. So,
tell us
more.
It is going to look different. For employment, how many of us really got to put in our head, gee, when I grow up, I want to be an X, and that was our first job? Well, that's not how life goes.
Right.
But I think sometimes our individuals on the spectrum think, okay, but I want to be a computer software debugger, or I want to be a video game designer, or I want to be a graphic artist, or whatever. But somehow we've missed the communication piece of what it takes to be on that path. And I agree with Paul, you know, try and do whatever is in your heart's desire to do in little steps and not too overwhelming so that everything shuts down and it's a big failure, disaster, you know, thing to deal with. But I think sometimes there's some reevaluation along those paths where you stop and say, now that I know a little bit more about this, am I still on board with that initial decision? And then there's changes that have to be made along the way. But so employment, the first-time job, is it going to be a courtesy clerk? Is it going to be a busser? Is it going to be, you know, what's it going to look like? And then what skills do I need to do that? I don't just need to know how to wipe off a table if I'm a busser. I have to be able to speak appropriately in the right category of conversation to patrons that are in the restaurant. Or if I'm taking the groceries out to the car, you know, is the appropriate topic video games to
knowing what
to
say when is a huge
and thing. Having the filter.
Right.
You know, if someone is, let's just say, smoking a cigarette and you happen to be against that, is it your place to say, you know, lady, you're going to die if you smoke that cigarette? Well, no. That's
oh, goodness,
not.
I feel like saying that all the time.
But there's the difference. Can you feel like it? And sometimes our individuals don't have the filter, and then there's the trouble on the job.
Comes out real fast. Yeah.
And so I've seen a lot of our individuals in that 23 to 24-year-old time frame just really blossom, and something in their brain clicks that they get a little back. I've seen them get a lot better with some of those nuances of socialization. And I don't see many of our 18 and 19-year-olds having that degree of what's necessary to really be successful in the employment field. Now, obviously, I'm not talking about 100% of the population.
Of course, just,
I know it's diversity. So diverse, and it just depends. But, you know, there's independent employment, which is I go, I interview, I apply, I get a job, and we'll see what happens. In my family, that has not been very successful. There's employment with a job coach. So job coach helps you through that process, checks on you while you're on the job, helps you learn how it works, helps you learn how to talk to your supervisor, things like that. That can be very helpful. It's kind of like talking about housing. There's so many different levels of independence that people choose.
Right.
There could be a supportive employment environment where you're actually working in a place where there are supervisors around that help, and it's mostly maybe people with disabilities working there. That's a possibility. And on from there. I have been very happy here in the Phoenix area with several programs that have been developed by local agencies that are specifically geared toward teens and young adults, so vocational programs. And maybe it's art, maybe it's cooking, maybe it's who knows what, courses. But being there does a number of things that I think are important, and that is, like Paul mentioned, a place to go on time with a supervisor with an expectation of behavior and choices while you're there. But while you're there, you're learning socialization plus some actual skill-based things, like, again, either art, cooking, you know, horses, whatever, but learning the workplace environment. I think somewhere after high school, I haven't seen a place where our individuals are learning workplace environment skills. And whereas some individuals might get that by osmosis in that work environment, I think, like Paul said, it's a different language, and a lot of times our population aren't going to pick that up.
Yeah, there's processing different pieces of information than we are. But, you know, I think you bring up, I like how much you think and talk in options and variety. And I think sometimes it's hard when families are stressed and scared and, you know, have anxiety about futures, it's hard to, you know, kind of slow down and calm down and go, wow, wait, there are things we can do, baby steps we can take. You know, yes, definitely in the world right now, there's not a ton of obvious answers for some of these things. And it's going to take, you know, I think strong parents like yourself who kind of say, you know what, I'm going to go out, I'm going to do something, I'm going to start something. And it sounds like you said, it just evolved, you know, and so it turned into something great as you did piece by piece. And just like you did that, I think leading, you know, your kids step by step. I mean, the other thing I've noticed is, you know, when these guys get out of high school, like you're saying, they don't necessarily have the self-awareness, the same self-awareness than a typical, you know, 18-year-old would have. And so I feel like spending some time, you know, not just on the skill, you know, workplace skills, but developing a self-awareness and focusing on just some of this, the life, you know, I want to say life things, relational things, just learning about yourself sort of things. I think they need that in a much more spotlighted way.
And I agree with you so much, Kim, because I like to say, let's work on strength-based life. What are you good at? What do you love to do? What lights your fire? And build on that. And you know what? So what if you can't do whatever? You know, maybe some friend of yours, that's their thing. And so then, poof, now you're roommates. But strength-based is so powerful because it seems like in the growing up years, especially for my family, everything was deficit-based. Let's fix all the things that are deficit. Mm-hmm. Instead of let's really give you lots of opportunity to do what you're good at.
Right.
Why
help
not?
You help you learn. I mean, you know, there's learning along the way.
Absolutely.
Right. I think it's that mindset. Oh, it looks like it's time for another short break. When we come back, we will continue our discussion about transition for teens and young adults with autism.
Birenbaum and Spien PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Birenbaum and Spien works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Hello, I'm Jessica Olson, and I'm here to introduce you to someone whose job it is to stand together with you at the worst of times. Life throws us unexpected curveballs, including losing loved ones, caretaking, troubled retirements, job losses, and legal settlements. Meet certified financial planner Larry Moscat, who pioneered crisis financial counseling. With a background as a clinical psychology practitioner, Larry has helped numerous people see through their crises to a brighter financial future. Larry?
Thank you, Jessica. At our firm, RII Advisors in North Scottsdale, we know terrible times don't usually last, but the effects of anxiety-infused financial decisions can last a lifetime. For 30 years, our prime goal has been to introduce freedom from fear and a feeling of financial security for our clients. We then move forward with safety and best-case outcome results when it comes to the financial decisions made during the worst of times.
To learn more, log on to www.RIIAdvisors.com. That's RIIAdvisors.com for information on how to get help. Once again, that's RIIAdvisors.com for financial counseling during life's most challenging times.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Ridenour, Heinsohn & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues, corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Heinsohn & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Welcome back to Understanding Autism. I'm Paul Loudon. I'm here with Kim Isaac and Debbie Weidinger.
And you got it.
We're talking about her efforts with AZ Assist and plans for helping teens and young adults who are on the autism spectrum and transitioning towards life.
Yeah, adult life.
Indeed.
Yeah. So we were talking about employment. I know you had one other thing you wanted to bring up.
Yes. You mentioned that I like to talk a lot about options, and I am an options girl because we're all so different. And one of the options I'd like to throw into that employment bucket is, what about home-based employment for our individuals, whether it be sewing for other people or baking and selling goods or jewelry design or painting or graphic design as an entrepreneur? Yes, there would need to be some support for business planning and some all the parts to go into that. But again, that strength-based piece of what's your passion, what are you good at, and then having that community of support come around to make that successful, that could be a great income for a lot of individuals.
Right. No, I like that idea. And again, like we were saying at the break, I mean, the idea of options and just thinking outside the box a little bit, and also, you know, really truly realizing that, you know, it is going to take more effort and a little bit of creativity on the part of the family, but it is so powerful because you do know your child the best.
Mm-hmm.
You understand them more than anybody, you know, any service or agency really does. I mean, and professionals are professionals, but just because you have a professional who may be an expert in autism, they're not an expert in your child.
That's right.
So it's very important to keep that in mind. So you had some other things you wanted to share with us, some little tidbits here and there. Tell us, what is it?
I want to talk a little bit about special needs planning. And here I'm talking about parents planning for their eventual death and what that might mean for an individual. If an individual on the spectrum has some public benefits, whether it be Social Security or food stamps or any kinds of things like that, medical insurance, a parent or a grandparent or an aunt or an uncle or a cousin who thinks they're doing their child a favor and going to leave them a bucket of money may have just messed up their life for many years.
Really?
And we don't really think that way.
Because that's treated as income.
It's treated as income,
right.
And then your benefits go away.
Okay.
And then I'm here to tell you that the paperwork for many benefit programs is a little daunting, even for those of us who think we have an organized sort of brain.
Right.
And it can be totally overwhelming for individuals on the spectrum. And so, you know, if someone were to lose their benefits and then down the road need to reapply, but you think, well, if I leave them a chunk of money, they don't need benefits. Well, how long are they going to live? How do you know?
Right.
You know,
you really need a professional.
You need a
planner.
Professional, and not just in the professional estate planners. I really want to make that clear. You really need someone that is a professional in special needs planning. And you can Google that or Yellow Pages.
Right. The Autism Society does have resources for that. Yes.
In fact, let's talk about resources, because that can be one of the things that a family can, when they're feeling alone, right, on that island, thinking, where do I even go to ask a question or to find what I need? And the Autism Society of America, the national site, has tons of information about all kinds of things, including newly diagnosed families all the way through to adulthood. And also here in Arizona, we have the Arizona Autism Coalition that is a wonderful cadre of professionals and agencies and support groups all related to autism in the community, and that's, they have great resources on their website, too. And now yours will have resources, and AZAssist.com has resources.
I know.
So
we're going to post all this, everybody. So you don't have to remember everything. We'll post it on Facebook and our website.
Another little tip about driving. If you have a teen or young adult who's interested in driving and you're thinking, oh, no, how am I going to teach them? I would bet you in your community you would have an organization that specializes in special needs driving. So they can do an evaluation of executive functioning skills, an evaluation of attention, and actually tell you, yes, I believe that with training this individual can drive, or, you know, probably not, at least right now.
Right.
And that can be really powerful to know.
When you just go to, like, the DMV, so that they have a department or something?
No, it wouldn't be the DMV.
Oh.
It would be an individual, a driving school. Only there are some that are dedicated to individuals with disabilities, even like no legs, no arms, or, you know, intellectual disabilities. Another thing I think is so valuable for our teens is when they're 16 and everybody else is going out and getting a driver's license, if our kids aren't going to get a driver's license, go to DMV and get an ID card, get a state ID card.
That's a great
idea. It is a great rite of passage and such a proud moment to have your name and face on a card in your pocket just like your friends.
Right.
I think that could be
well, just to
helpful.
Have that kind of grown-up responsibility of, you know, when you're out, you need to have your wallet and your ID and money and whatever else you need. I think that's powerful. So these are good tips. I'm taking notes here so we can add these to our site. So driving, ID, estate planning, and, you know, actually the Arizona Autism Coalition, I just want to say, again, the idea of that need for community, because that was formed by a group of self-starters, you know, people that were involved, professionals, parents that came together and do it, you know, put that together. And I think that, I mean, there's so much information in this show, but I feel like one of the big things that I would hope people really get from this is, you know, is to start connecting with other people. It's, there's power in that, you know, in numbers and people who understand you.
Yes, and you can think that even that is like, I can't add that to my schedule. I can't go to a meeting. I can't go to a conference. I can't even, you know, do a webinar or something. But I would just encourage all the parents out there that are really feeling like they're alone on an island to just take a step and find someone else walking in your similar shoes. It's so powerful. And I don't want to leave out on our show today, since we're talking about teens and young adults, is those that are still in high school, you must have an appropriate transition plan in that IEP.
Oh, okay.
And that can really be something that gets not enough attention in some situations.
Do schools initiate that, or do parents have to initiate that?
Well, there you go. Therein lies some of the issue. Parents can always ask for that. Schools are getting much better at saying, hey, we need to talk about future plans for after high school.
Right.
But again, sometimes the professional is necessary in that environment, really necessary to get an appropriate high school set of goals set up so that student is more prepared for after high school.
Wow, that's so valuable. Thank you so much
You're welcome.
Bringing up all of these important points and for everything you've done to support our community here. I find you to be very inspiring, and I'm excited to share all of your resources. And I know, so Paul, we announced our website.
Uh-huh.
Do you want to just share a little bit again?
It's understanding-autism.info. It has sections for Kim and I to post blogs. It has, we'll have podcasts of our radio show, videos of any talks we do, discussion forums, and resources. So come check it out.
To join.
Let us know if it works for you or not, if there's any issues. I've posted a link to it on our Facebook page, so you'll be able to find us pretty easily. And we hope to hear from you soon.
Yeah, and we're going to post some notes. I will be posting some notes from today and some resources. And I also just want to announce, I don't know how many of you remember, we had Ray Morris on, who's a father, dad, for special. I know you know him. He's amazing. He's a firefighter. We're doing a fundraiser for him. So contact me on our Facebook page if you want to be involved. Thank you again, Debbie. It was great having you.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.